Sponsored by Gordon Law School at Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and editorial review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit the webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on billions for the bankers and debts for the people when we come back. Well, welcome to Tax Freedom Day. Tax Freedom Day, that's about May 12th every year. That means that you work all of January, February, March, April, and a third of May to pay your income tax for the year. And that's not all. Then you can look forward to working for the rest of May and all of June to pay the rest of your withholding taxes. Now, this income tax and Social Security tax are two criminal enterprises. And that's because the income tax is the second plank to the Communist Manifesto and Social Security is the eighth plank. Now, the income tax and Social Security tax also violate three of the Ten Commandments and eight statutes of the Scriptures, including our English common law. Now, 14 million Americans are not enrolled in Social Security, and there are more opting out every day. That's why I contend that you owe it to yourself to at least ask the question, do I really want to participate in this kind of criminal activity? So if there's a question in your mind, why don't you call or write today and order my free general law CD package. To order your free general law CD package, just call direct 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Or you can go to the website georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and then send an email request for the free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or call direct 417-273-4967. My tax and status school is also available on compact disc for adult homeschooling. Be sure to ask about it. Why don't you call right now before you forget? All right, last time we were talking about billions for the bankers, and I introduced you to a wild new concept. The wild new concept was the international forecaster, and we took a look at some of the current headlines going on in the news today. The guy that writes the international forecaster is Robert Chapman. Chapman has been publishing the newsletter for 46 years. He's an economist. Just like a number of other newsletter writers that I recommend or that I review from time to time, I recommend that you at least subscribe to one. I subscribe to three or four, but I guess that's because I'm in the business. But you need to subscribe to one, and Chapman's as good as any and better than most. I also like the Money Changer and the Privateer. Remember that newsletter that we review here from time to time from Australia? They'll keep you up to date on what's going on in the real world, not the artificial Land of Oz that we're fed pablum from CBS and ABC and Time and Newsweek, but the real world of economics. This is where the numbers really crunch. And the numbers that crunch come out of the Treasury Department or the Bureau of Labor Statistics or the Department of Labor, the Commerce Department. You know, those dull, dry numbers that nobody pays any attention to until some economist, you know, picks it up. And most economists are working for the government, or they're working for General Motors or Ford or Microsoft. And they're going to put on the best possible face. In fact, not only will they put on the best possible face, they'll lie to you. That's the worst part of it. They just plain lie. And our government today, in the year 2005, lies a lot. They lie to us about the inflation rate. They lie to us about the unemployment numbers. They lie to us constantly. They call it spin in the news media. It's all right to lie as long as you put a spin on it. I'm sitting here saying, well, why is it all right to lie? Why can't we tell the truth? Or what is it about the truth that is so disgusting that we don't want to hear it? Now, most Americans are happy with ABC and CBS, and I don't want to shake anybody's repose or confidence in the news media. You know, you have a right to make your choice, and people make their choices in life, and that's why I chose Bob Chapman, Franklin Sanders, Don McElvaney, these crazy right-wing reactionary fanatics, because they tell me what's going on. In addition to what propaganda I'm supposed to know that I get from the news media and PBS, I also get what I'm not supposed to know through the underground press, and I put the two together, and then I compare them with Bible prophecy. I take a look in the scripture to find out what Jesus told us in Matthew 24 and Moses told us in Deuteronomy 28, and I kind of crunch that together, and it gives me a better perspective on reality. I know it's a wild new idea, but why don't you mull it over a little bit? Now, I happened to be reading the Ozark County Times the other day, and I want to share this with you, because the Ozark County Times, our local newspaper published in Gainesville, Missouri, is worth reading from time to time from a local perspective, because every once in a while on the opinions page, somebody will come up with a pretty good story, and there happened to be one in here that just fit right in with what we're talking about here this week. So listen to this. He says, life is simple. Life is simple. And he quotes these words out of a book that he was supposed to read when he was in college. It says, they were the best of times, they were the worst of times. That's the little quotation that comes out of the book. And he says, these words are from some famous book written by some famous author that I was supposed to have read when I was back in college. I didn't read it, for there was no need. The first 12 words told the story. I got it. For some reason, those words came to mind last week when I sold a load of calves. I calve out almost everything in the spring, but I have one little group of cows that are fall calvers, and I usually market the calves around the 1st of June. But with prices like they are right now, I just didn't think that they could be worth any more total dollars 2 months from now. So my field rep for the stockyards concurred, so I loaded up the 21 calves straight off their mamas, and then I took them in. They only averaged 530 pounds, 530 pounds each, about 100 pounds less than they would weigh in June. But the whole bunch of steers and heifers brought an average of $701 a head. Now, I've never sold calves for that kind of money in my life. What would my dad think if he were still alive today? Surely these are the best of times. Now, I should have been content to leave it alone, but I just happened to be going through my old high school Future Farmers of America record books, showing my son how things were back in the good old days. And I happened upon a line that I had sold 21 calves in the summer of 1969. The calves, all steers, that I had bought the fall before weighed a little over 600 pounds each. And they sold for an average of $165 a head. Now, these little babies that I sold last week brought over four times as much. Now, that must have made 1969 the worst of times. But I read on a little further, and later that summer, I took my calf money and I bought a brand new car. I paid the outrageous price of $2,875 for the GoFast automobile. I had enough money left over to pay the sales tax and purchase a full year of insurance on the vehicle. And I drove it everywhere because gas was only 20 cents a gallon. I would have to look hard to find a new car that I could buy with what last week's calves brought. And even if I could find a new car and find one that cheap, I guarantee you that I wouldn't be able to pay the sales tax, and I wouldn't be able to afford a year's worth of insurance on it, or be able to get into it, or be able to pronounce its name, or be able to fill it up with fuel. Now, I did a little figuring, and I determined that to purchase the equivalent car today, pay today's sales tax and insurance, and then operate that vehicle for a year with fuel prices what they are today, I'd have to sell three loads of these high-dollar calves to equal the purchasing power of my 1969 sale. Now, I'm suffering from depression, and I have decided that these are the best of times and the worst of times. I've also decided for my better mental health to quit keeping any type of records at all. I don't want to look back 36 years from now and think that these were the good old days. Now, that's quite a little story. A little local cattleman around here sold 21 calves for $701. Let me just write that down. 701 times 21. He got $14,721 for those calves. $14,000 for 21 calves. Well, that's a pretty good price. Now, I just wanted to bring that to your attention, because this man here, more than likely he's a voter, and he more than likely voted for George Bush in the last election. And he's, you know, an older guy. He's 1969. He was in FFA, so he's got to be 50 years old, doesn't he? So here's a guy that's 50 years old. He's in the cattle business. He's selling calves. He looks back 36 years and he says, Jesus, I got four times as much money as I did 30 years ago. But I couldn't buy a new car today. Now, I've mentioned that to you here on the air a number of times, that in 1955, my dad bought a brand new 1955 Chevrolet automobile for $2,500. $2,500, brand new. Now, it wasn't super common for people to walk into a dealer and put $2,500 down on the counter and walk out with a new car, but it wasn't that uncommon either. Richard Van Pelt's daddy did that. And I know of a number of other kids, you know, when I was in high school, whose daddies went in and bought a new Oldsmobile or a new Pontiac or a new Chevrolet automobile and paid cash for it, just like this kid did here. But you don't find anybody doing that today, and there's a very important reason why. So let me tell you what's happening here. Remember, we've been talking about inflation. We've been talking about the money supply. We're talking about the Federal Reserve, the bankers. Now, there was a time in America when we had real money. There was a time in America before we totally adopted the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, when there was still some semblance of property, property rights, and private business. Today, we have a fiat currency. Now, in 1969, we had just gone off of silver. We used to have silver until 1965. And inflation hadn't cranked up like it has today by 1969 and 70. It was on its way. You know, the die had been cast. But here's what's happening to you and me and to this guy, this cattleman over here. You see, we measure money in constant dollars. We look back in time and we say, gee, my dad bought a 1955 Chevrolet for $2,500. And that same car today probably cost you around $25,000, 10 times as much today, thinking in constant dollars, not in purchasing power. not in purchasing power. So in order for you to do the same thing today that my dad did in 1955, you'd have to be making 10 times as much money. Now, my dad back in 1955 was probably making in the neighborhood, I don't know exactly, he's probably making in the neighborhood of $5,000 a year. So today, he'd have to be making $50,000 a year, as opposed to $5,000 back then. I mean, he might have been making a little more than $5,000, it might have been $6,000 or $7,000, but you know, today people are making $3,000 a month. $3,000 a month. I was looking in the paper the other day and I noticed, and it was in the International Forecaster, that the average rent in the Los Angeles basin is $1,397 a month. $1,397 a month, average rent. I'm an old real estate guy and I was from the Bay Area and I can remember when the average rent was $235 a month back about 1970. In fact, it probably wasn't even the average because a two-bedroom apartment in Hayward, California was $235 a month in 1970. You could rent a studio apartment in Oakland for $125, easy. Think of that now. Average rent now in Los Angeles basins, $1,397 a month. I'd have a hard time paying $1,400 a month. $1,400 a month. How much is that a year? Let's just try that one out. 1,400 times 12, and that's $16,800 that he's paying on rent in Los Angeles, California. Now that should represent no more than 25% of your income. So let's multiply that times 4. To pay that kind of rent in Los Angeles, you need to be making $67,200 if you're going to maintain the same standard of living that we were maintaining back about 1970. Are you making $67,200 a year? You know, boys and girls, most of you people, the median average is $41,000. Half the people of America make over $41,000 and half the people of America make under $41,000. In 1970, everybody could afford an apartment. By golly, I don't think I can afford $1,400 a month. You know, and I'm kind of an old man. I don't have half the bills that most of you young people do, and I think that'd be stretching my budget a little. So in constant dollars, we're better off today than we ever were before. So when this guy says, my God, I sold my calves for four times what I did in 1969, he needed at least 8 or 10 times as much money to maintain the same standard of living. And the reason for that is that the purchasing power of your dollar has gone down. That's the killer. You see, the purchasing power has gone down. And we call that inflation. And when inflation eats up the purchasing power of your money, which, by the way, your money over the last 3 years has lost one-third of its purchasing power. One-third in 3 years. That's why these underground newsletter writers are up in arms, and that's why they're just absolutely appalled and aghast at what they're witnessing here with this supposedly conservative Republican administration in Washington, D.C., the Bush administration. So I thought I would share that with you, that as long as you have this inflation, as long as you have paper money, you're going to have inflation. As long as you have inflation, you're going to come out the loser. Now, this guy was better off in 1969 than he is today. He was better off with the value of a 1969 dollar when we were still under the Bretton Woods gold standard than he is today under fiat currency 35 years later, getting four times as much money. So we get mesmerized by the fact that we're making more and more dollars, more and more dollars, more and more dollars by less and less goods. Give you an illustration. Now, the other day I was looking at some numbers and I noticed that in the year 2005, you Social Security recipients got a 3.5% cost of living increase. Now, the rate of inflation, I'm talking about the real rate of inflation, is running 12% or more per year right now. That's 1% a month. Now, the government tells us that it's running around 3%, 4% max. Hell, boys and girls, just the price of gasoline in the last 6 months has gone up more than 4%. So is housing. You know, the price of a house in the United States has gone up 50% in the last 5 years. Do you know that the price of your house has gone up by 50% in 5 years nationwide? I just saw some numbers the other day that just boggled my mind. Back in the 1970, I could have built an FHA 235 house for $15,000 and sold it for $35,000. A nice house. I mean, this is a house that's got 4 bedrooms, 2 baths, an upstairs, big upstairs living room, and a downstairs family room. And I could have built that house for $15,000 in 1970 in Boise, Idaho. In fact, I built one or two. Today, the median price on that house is $169,000 nationwide. In some San Francisco, Californians, which is sky high, in Jacksonville, Florida, which is low. So you just take those numbers. Now take a look at this. In order for you to buy that house back in 1970, that house and its payments couldn't have cost you more than 25% of your income, or you couldn't have borrowed the money to buy it. So in the 1970, how much money were we making? You know, if you were making $10,000 a year in 1970, you were in Fat City. I mean, Fat City. That was $800 a month, wasn't it? Let's just try that out. $10,000 divided by 12. $833 a month. And you'd live very well on $833 a month. Give you an illustration. In 1968, just 2 years before 1970, just picking this number, 1970, I was working at International Harvester, went over to work for a daily body company. I was a machinist. union card carrying machinist, getting paid top wages in the top area of the country, the San Francisco Bay Area, $3.28 an hour. I made $130 a week. $130 a week take home, and I live like a king. Let me try this one out. 130 times 4.2. $546 a month, I'm telling you, 1970, I was living like a king. This guy here sold his calves in 1969, same time frame, for $165 a calf. He went out and bought a brand new car. Isn't that special? All right, now what's happened over the last 30 or 40 years is that we're making more and more dollars, but the dollars are cheaper. So to give you an illustration, you Social Security workers, you Social Security recipients out there, you're getting $1,000 a month or something on that order, and your $1,000 was increased by 3.5%. But the inflation rate is running 1% a month or 12%. So in constant dollars, you feel like, God, I was getting $1,000 a month and I got a 3% increase. Let's just try that. 1,000 times 1.03, you got a $30 a month raise. $30 a month. So take that 30, you know, 30 times 12, you got a $360 raise. Isn't that special? Now you say to yourself, well, God, I'm better off now. You know, I was making $1,000, I'm getting $360 a year more. And next year they'll give you another $360. Now here's what really happened to you. You were making $1,000 a month. All right, so you take the 1,000 times 12. That's 12,000 a year. Now let's add $360 to that. And that gives you $12,360. Now let's take the real inflation rate. You know, the price of gasoline, the price of housing, the price of rent. Those things that the Consumer Price Index from the Department of Labor don't include. They leave them out because those are the things that are going to throw the numbers way up into the stratosphere. So instead of listening to the government, let's take a listen to reality. And let's take $12,360 times 1.12. You needed $13,843.20 to break even. You see, that's where this guy with his calves is. Every year that goes by, the inflation rate is understated, but in constant dollars, you're getting more. So every year, you Social Security people get this cost of living index raise, and they raise your money. They give you more money. They actually send you more dollars. More dollars. My God, next year, you're going to be getting an extra $360. But unfortunately, you're going to need at least $1,500 more money. So you actually needed $1,500, but they didn't give you $1,500, they gave you $360. And this goes on year after year after year after year. So, you know, there was a time when you were eating Kansas City strip steak, and then as living costs went up, you couldn't quite afford the Kansas City steaks, and so you settled for stew meat, and so now you have more stew. And then as the price of meat continually escalated, you began to eat more hamburger. And then as you began to escalate a little bit further, and you find out pretty soon that you're eating two or three vegetarian meals a week, and more beans and cornbread, and, you know, little by little, like the old story of the camel sticking his nose in the tent, you come out with less and less. Now, along the same line, what happens to the wage earner is the same thing that's happening to the pensioner. You're making, you know, let's say you're making $10 an hour, and you're living your life and one thing and another, and then every year you get a little bit of a raise. You know, maybe you get from $10, you go to $11, and from $11, you go to $12, and so on and so on. You're driving truck and you're a Teamster, and you're living your life and doing things. But you see, you're not getting raises that actually compensate you for the depreciation of the dollar. And as a result of that, as time progresses along, to maintain your standard of living, in other words, in order for you to keep eating those Kansas City strip steaks, you have to have more money. And so what you do when you go down to the hardware store to buy some hardware, you use your credit card. Pretty soon as you use your credit card, you say, well, instead of paying it off this month, I'll pay it off next month or the month after because I'm a little bit short this month paying the bills. And pretty soon, you know, that credit card is out near the max limit and you're paying the minimum on it. And you say, geez, I think I need another credit card. Now your credit's good. Your credit's good. And so pretty soon you get a second credit card and a third and a fourth, and pretty soon you got a credit card debt out here about $10,000, which is about equal maybe to, you know, 6 months worth of work. Now, many of you people out there are making, you know, let's say you're a mechanic and you're a Mr. Goodwrench and you're making, you know, $17, $18, $20 an hour. Let's give you $20 an hour. Well, there's 2,000 hours in a year. So let's give you 2,000 times $20. Now that's $40,000 a year. And do you know what the median average income in America is? $41,000. You have to be making $20 an hour, boys and girls, to be at the average, median average. Are you making $20 an hour? Half the people in America make over $20 an hour, and half the people in America make under $20 an hour. And every year that goes by, rich or poor, you're losing 12% right now. That's the inflation rate, 12%. That's the real, honest-to-God, bottom-line numbers. Like it or not, read them and weep. That's where reality is at. All right, now that being the case, then you've got to be making more and more of these worthless dollars each and every time you get one of these raises. You Social Security people needed to have a 12% raise, and that was just to stay even. You're not going to get ahead. You're not going to get any more. But the deception that's going on has been for many years is that these more and more dollars that you're earning is deceiving, because you're thinking of 1969 prices in $2,005. And we all do that. We think of $1,955. Well, I bought my car for $2,500, and now it's $25,000. Okay. Well, then you needed to make 10 times as much money. So if you're not making $67,000 a year today over the $5,000 that you were making back in 1955, then you have fallen behind, haven't you? Paper money is not the way to get ahead. Now, we've tried that paper money. You know, the first paper money was issued here in the United States, I mean, after our Constitution was ratified in 1796. Congress did this. Same guys, you know, that ratified our Constitution 10 years before, organized an organization called the United States National Bank, gave it a 20-year charter until 1816. Then they renewed the charter from 1816 to 1836. Now, there was a guy that came on the scene. His name was Andrew Jackson. And when we come back from the break, I'm going to tell you the story about Andrew Jackson. Jackson refused to renew the charter of the U.S. National Bank in 1836. So from 36 to 1863, we didn't have a national bank. We didn't have paper money. Now, there were state chartered banks, and there were always banks out there issuing paper money. And we've always had recessions and depressions and a money crisis, and they're always caused by paper money. And the guys that issue the paper money, the bankers also control the press, and they always blame it on gold and silver. Now, always remember this, boys and girls, gold and silver came from God himself in Leviticus 19, 35 and 36, and Deuteronomy 25, 13 through 16. He told you, don't have unjust weights and balances in your bags. You deal with just weights and balances. He gave us gold and silver coin for money, put it into the earth's crust in the right proportions, and said, now go out and buy, sell, and trade, and be happy. We said, oh no, we're not going to do that. We're going to go out here and create a bank. We're going to have paper money. And so here's this guy. He says, life is simple. 1969, he compares the price of his cattle in 1969 and today. And he finds out that he's about four or five times short today. He took it in the shorts. In 36 years, he has taken a loss. He's still out here voting the straight Republican ticket, but he's taken a loss. And the loss is getting bigger. And the more inflation, the more deficit spending, the more balance of payments deficits that we run up, the poorer our standard of living is going to be. The poorer we're going to get, until finally all of our wealth is stripped away, taken away from us, and we're flat ass broke. Now that's what's coming, boys and girls. So as the old saying goes, bend over, put your head between your knees, and kiss your ass goodbye, because that's what's coming. Hey, we're at the halfway point here. We got to stop here, give you a little reminder of what you're listening to here, so that the radio stations out there and the networks and et cetera can do their thing in life. Like disclaim that they ever heard of George Gordon or know anything about me. And that's why we have to tell you that the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. And they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or of the radio station you're listening to. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to the website georgegordon.org, or you can call the Law School Direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now you may be asking the question, well, why in the world would I want to call that law school? Well, listen up. You've been listening to the Law Hour. You are listening to the Law Hour and editorial review. It's sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults. Not kids, adults, on compact disc. Now, for more information, just go to that homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, just in case you hear a program you want to copy it. You can get it on 16 or 32-bit, downloaded right on your own computer. That's at least stereo quality or radio broadcast quality, if you so desire. And they're all free. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. And that's why you should be listening to the Law Hour and editorial review. All right, let's take a look here at Andrew Jackson. Andrew Jackson was about our seventh or eighth president. He was president from 1828 to 1836, served two terms. He was called the Commoner's President. He's the guy, remember, that opened the White House to all of those ruffians and frontiersmen and scallywags. It was a great scandal at the time. And, of course, all of the, all the wealthy people of Washington, you know, on the Beltway and the inner city, inner sanctums of government, you know, they just were absolutely appalled that this frontiersman could become president of the United States. And he made a couple of astute observations. So Jackson, I'm not sure, was even literate. I'm not sure he was literate. I'm not saying that he was illiterate, but he certainly wasn't the refined gentleman that you see. You know, as Jesus made an observation one time, they came up and somebody came up to him and they were talking about John the Baptist. And he said, well, would you come to see a reed shaken in the wind? You know, John the Baptist was kind of a crude guy, and living out in the wilderness on honey and wild locusts, and he was a frontiersman of the frontiersmen. And what did you come to see? A reed shaking in the wind, or some guy dressed in fine clothes living in king's palaces? Well, Jackson was a commoner. He wasn't the Henry Kissinger. He wasn't the George Bush. He wasn't the rich and the powerful and the mighty. He wasn't one of the Kennedy clan. So, Andrew Jackson and the Den of Vipers. In 1828, when Andrew Jackson was campaigning for the presidency, he was opposed to the central banking system. And during his campaign, he told the bankers, quote, "You are a den of vipers, and I intend to rout you out, and by the eternal God, I will rout you out." And he also stated that if the people only understood the rank injustice of our money and banking system, there would be a revolution before morning. So in 1828, Andrew Jackson understood this dilemma that we Americans find ourselves in today with paper money, the bankers issuing paper money. Well, during his inauguration message, Jackson said that the federal constitution must be obeyed, states' rights preserved, our national debt must be paid, direct taxes and loans avoided, and the federal union preserved. Now, these are the objects that I have in view, and regardless of all of the consequences, I will carry them into effect. Andrew Jackson was a champion of all of the people and of the state's rights. In 1832, Jackson ran for the presidency once again. The election of 1832 was centered primarily on the bank issue. The Jacksonians chose Martin Van Buren to run for vice president with Jackson. The history of the present Democratic Party is traced from this convention. The supporters of the bank called themselves the National Republicans, which later became the Whig Party. They nominated Henry Clay for president and John Sargent, a member of the bank's legal staff, for vice president. Well, Andrew Jackson believed that the people, by re-electing him, had expressed their opinion that he should break the power of what he called this hydra of corruption, the second bank of the United States. And on July 10, 1832, President Jackson presented to the Senate his veto message on rechartering the Bank of the United States. The following are some statements from this veto message. Now, here's Andrew Jackson. He would have been, by today's comparison, it would be President Bush going into the Senate and vetoing the Senate bill on banking and appropriations. I mean, could you imagine President Bush doing that? Could you see President Bush campaigning for a constitutional amendment to outlaw paper money or to abolish the Federal Reserve System? Now, most of you already know that the Federal Reserve Bank, the Federal Reserve System, is a private cartel of banks and bankers. It has nothing to do with government. It's a private consortium of banks, and it has been given a license to steal. That's what the bottom line is, license to steal. And the people of America love it. Now, and I don't love it. I can't do anything about it. In other words, I'm just George Gordon, and I can't abolish the Federal Reserve, but I don't have to do business with them, and neither do you. Now, Andrew Jackson saw a problem, and he said, let's solve that problem. Now, you and I are truck drivers and blue-collar workers. You know, I'm a general contractor, but I'm still the kind of guy that goes out here and builds a set of steps or puts windows in the house. I'm out here remodeling my house right now, putting windows in. You know, there's dirt under my fingernails. I'm a blue-collar worker, and I'm just one of those commoners like everybody else. And I don't do business with the mafia, and I suspect that you probably don't either, because they're a bunch of crooks and criminals. And I don't do business with the United States government because they too are crooks and criminals. And I always suggest to my students that they reconsider their business associates, because the people you associate with are the kind of people that normal people like you and me would associate with crime and criminals. And when I see somebody associating with criminals, I say to myself, well, that guy must be one of those criminals. We must be one of them. So if you don't do business with the mafia, you ought not to be doing business with the United States of America. And then they've got 50 kissing cousins out here that are also in criminal occupations, you know, like loan sharking. Let me tell you a little story here. I'm going to interject a little piece in here. Here in Missouri, we have a loan sharking operation which was enacted by our state legislature. And here's the way it works. It's called a car title loan company. And they, our legislature, I mean, get this, it was a Democratic legislature and a Democrat governor that signed it into law. And they charge, get this, they charge 118% interest per year. Yeah, it's 9% a month, isn't it? Is it 9% or is it more than that? Or maybe it's 18% a month. Let's take it. I figured it out one time. It was 118% interest per year. Let's take 118, divide it by 12. Yeah, it's not quite 10% interest per month. 9.83% interest per month. Now, you talk about loan sharking. My God, I don't think that the mafia or the Cosa Nostra has ever charged 10% a month. 30% a year. Yeah, I've heard of loan sharking at 30% a year. Hell, the banks do that now at 27%. But 10% a month. Now, the state of Missouri, the legislature and the governor, charging 10% a month, chartering companies to charge 10% interest per month, is a loan sharking operation. That goes beyond criminal. I don't think that usury in the Bible or Moses or God ever dreamed of 10% a month, and that's what the state of Missouri authorizes, for crying out loud. So when I say the United States government's criminal, the state of Missouri is just as criminal. They don't follow the law of God. And I think that comes down hardest on the poor, don't you? I don't think anybody that can add and subtract would go out and pledge his car title at 10% a month unless he was so damn desperate he had no other choice. Well, anyway, Andrew Jackson was a champion of all the people and of all the state's rights. And in 1832, Jackson ran for president. Remember that? Jackson believed that the people, by reelecting him, had expressed their opinion that he should break the power of this hydra of corruption. Now, having considered the bill with solemn regard, he said, this is his veto message to the principles of the Constitution, I come to the conclusion that it ought not to become a law. And some of the powers and privileges possessed by the existing bank are unauthorized by the Constitution, subversive to the rights of the states, and dangerous to the liberties of the people. And it enjoys an exclusive privilege of banking under the authority of the federal government, a monopoly of its favor and support, and as a necessary consequence, almost a monopoly of the foreign and domestic exchange. Did you get that? So Jackson said, we're not going to allow that kind of a monopoly. Sheldon Emery, in his little book here called Billions for the Bankers, pointed out with some degree of certainty and descriptive prose how this system is robbing you, the truck drivers and the ordinary Joe Sixpacks of America. And that's why I've come to the conclusion, I don't think we should do business at the bank. I don't think we should have credit cards, checking accounts. I don't think that we should write checks and pay our bills. I don't think that we should do business with these banks at all. Zero. I don't think we should do business in Federal Reserve notes. I think we should use gold and silver coin. After all, we have gold and silver coin at our disposal. Now, I know somebody's going to say, yeah, but they don't take gold and silver down at Walmart. Well, if Walmart wants paper, give them paper. But why do you have to work for paper? Why don't you work for gold? Well, somebody says, well, I work for Yellow Freight, and Yellow Freight won't pay me in gold. Why the hell do you want a job at Yellow Freight? Why don't you go out and go to work and get paid in gold? I get paid in gold. You want to go to school here? You pay me in gold. And if you don't pay me in gold, go to school somewhere else. That's simple enough. People that want to go to school here, go out to the gold brokers and buy gold and come in here and pay me in gold coin. That's what God requires. That's what our government mints. We have a mint operating in America producing gold and silver coins. We have a two-tier monetary system. One of the best-kept secrets in America today. You'll never hear anything about that on the CBS Evening News with Bob Schieffer now. He's replaced Dan Rather. So don't send me an email now and say, well, it's impossible and can't be done. Hell, there's thousands of people all over America that have removed themselves from the paper money standard and gone back to the gold standard. Now, when Andrew Jackson made this veto message, there was a two-tier monetary system. There was the U.S. National Bank and paper money. And then there was the U.S. Treasury minting gold and silver coin, which is exactly what you have today in the year 2005. You got the Federal Reserve Bank, our U.S. National Bank, issuing paper money. And you have the United States Mint issuing gold and silver coin. Now, you and I have a choice to make, boys and girls. We can use gold and silver coin in our business transactions, and we can put ourselves on a gold standard, or we can use the U.S. National Bank's paper money and let them rob us. Now, if you continue to be robbed after today's program, then you're the proximate cause of your own injury. Now, I don't expect everybody in America to jump on the bandwagon and give up paper money. I mean, after all, people have choices to make. And sometimes the choices we make are inconvenient. Who in the world wants to be inconvenienced? God forbid that you should be inconvenienced. Hell, even McDonald's is taking credit cards now. I got to go and get my Big Mac on my MasterCard. Well, okay. If that's what you want to do, get after it. Why don't you reconsider eating Big Macs? That'd be a step in the right direction, health-wise. Why don't you take a second thought about that credit card, and why don't you at least use Federal Reserve notes and pay cash? Why don't you rethink working for Yellow Freight and say, well, wouldn't I make more money working for myself? I mean, after all, boys and girls, you got to be making $67,000 a year just to stay where you were in 1955. And I tell my students when I walk in the door here in my business school, if you're making under $100,000 a year, you're wasting your time. Wasting your time. I wouldn't get out of bed if you don't pay me $100,000 a year. And I don't work for Yellow Freight. You need to be working for yourself. You know, our founding fathers were pretty wise guys. They envisioned a nation of small independent farmers, small independent businessmen, not wage earners at General Motors. Some guy that's out here making his own cars and selling his own cars. Some guy that's out here making his own buggies and buggy whips. And some guy that's out here making his own van life that owns property, owns land. Like this little cattle rancher over here. The little cattle rancher over here could be making more money. He should be selling those calves over here retail to his own customers for gold coin organic beef, and he should be getting $6 a pound cut and wrapped. He got paid pretty well, but he didn't get paid well enough. He needs to be getting double, or as he said, four times as much. Well, you know, he could do pretty well on that cattle ranch. I've got a few cows over here, and I'm not complaining. I'm not selling them at the sale. I'm not getting what they're worth or what I need to get for $1955, but I do better than he does. And I'm not counting my money in constant dollars either. I'm counting my money in purchasing power. You know, what does that money buy today? And if it doesn't buy today what it did in 1955 or 1945 or 35 or 25 or 15 or 1850, then I'm taking it in the shorts, and so are you. And Andrew Jackson understood that. He said, I'm going to veto this bill. This bill here is for Henry Kissinger. This bill is for David Rockefeller. This bill is for Ted Kennedy. This isn't for Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife, and I'm going to kick it in the ass. And that's just exactly what he did. Last president in our history that ever kicked the bankers in the ass. Well, the last one that ever did it and got away with it. Abe Lincoln tried, but he didn't quite carry it out. Now, Jackson went on to say that this act seems to be predicated on the erroneous idea that the present stockholders have a prescriptive right to not only the favor, but to the bounty of government for their benefit. And does this not exclude the whole American people from competition in the purchase of this monopoly? Remember, Sheldon Emery brought that out. He said, you know, money should be coined by Congress and the value regulated by Congress, not by a private banking consortium, which is given that privilege by Congress. You know, you got one representative in Congress. His name is Ron Paul. Ron Paul, I got to mention this guy from time to time. He's the Larry McDonald of today. If there's two of these guys in the Congress, I don't know about the other one. But anyway, Ron Paul over here is constantly badgering the current chairman of the Federal Reserve. And every once in a while, he gets kind of poignant and he asks some personal questions like, you know, how do you figure that out, or how do you do this or that or something else? Ron Paul is the only guy in the Congress that's advocating gold and silver coin. An abolition of the Federal Reserve. And he goes around every once in a while and he says, hey, the Federal Reserve is filled with a bunch of thieves and crooks and it ought to be abolished. You got one representative. I don't know how in the hell this guy got elected to Congress. He's from Texas. He's the only guy in the Congress that I know of. This guy's head screwed on straight. It's a wonder that he hasn't been killed yet. But I guess they've marginalized him now. He's just a kook. He's just some kind of a nut. A basket case. Some fruitcake. He should be from California, but is actually from Texas. Now, if you had about, you know, 200 or 300 of those guys in the Congress, you might be getting somewhere. But you can forget about Ron Paul. You can forget about anybody going into the Congress and making any meaningful changes. That isn't going to happen. But you can make a change. I can make a change. We don't have to be robbed. Andrew Jackson said, well, I'm going to protect all of the American people. If we had a George Bush who was like an Andrew Jackson who would come in for us, the people of America, that would be one thing. You're not going to find that. Hell, these bankers own all these politicians. The only guy that they don't own, I guess, is Ron Paul. How this guy gets reelected year after year, beats me. I don't know. Surely the bankers must be supporting the other side. But for some reason, those people down in Texas keep sending Ron Paul back. He's like a breath of fresh air. He's like John the Baptist, you know. He's out in the wilderness preaching to the choir. Nobody else is listening to him. While Andrew Jackson went on, he says, this act seems to be predicated on the erroneous idea that the present stockholders have a prescriptive right to not only the favor, but to the bounty of government. You just saw this. The President of the United States just the other day signed this bankruptcy bill for the benefit of the credit card companies and the bankers. Not for the benefit of the people out here that are being gouged to 10% a month by our state legislature here in our state on these car title loans, or 27% interest on these credit card debts, which is, by the way, strictly prohibited by God in the Bible. Now, you know what side George Bush is on, the banker. They sure as hell aren't on the side of the Ten Commandments or the law of Moses or the law of God. Well, then, you know, neither are the people of the United States. The people of the United States so hate God and the Bible that they would rather pay a 30 or 40% income tax and Social Security tax than they would pay a 10% tithe, for crying out loud. You know, you'd think the people would be thinking in their own self-interest, but they don't. Well, Jackson went on to say, if this bank were rechartered in perpetuity, the present stockholders and those inheriting their rights as successors would be established as a privileged order, clothed both with great political power and enjoying immense pecuniary advantages from their connection with government. Hey, that's where the banks are today. They've got it. They have arrived. The millennium has arrived for banks and bankers. They've got a direct connection with the Congress of the United States. They make the banking policy. You saw it with Sheldon Emery in the first three programs I did here. Hey, these guys have a pipeline right straight into the United States Treasury. They make the money. And of course, at our expense. And they've got us $8 trillion in debt, and everybody that's signed up now with a Social Security program are the underwriters on that debt. You wait until Deuteronomy 28:68 comes around, slaps you up alongside the head, their partner, and I think that'll bring you back down to earth, as my granddaddy used to say. Got time for you to come back down to earth, little George. As he bounced me off the wall. Jackson went on to say, should its influence become concentrated, as it may, under the operation of such an act as this, in the hands of a self-elected directory whose interests are identified with those of the foreign stockholders, will there not be cause to tremble for the independence of our country in war? Their power would be great whenever they might choose to exert it. You know, the sovereignty of the United States of America is a dead letter issue. The Chinese control our destiny. The Chinese. Yeah, those commie pinko fags over there in China today control our destiny. And that was created by Alan Greenspan and Company, the Federal Reserve. Now, we're not going to turn the clock back, and we're not going to make any meaningful changes. And you can sit back and you can wait for Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26 to swallow you up if you so desire. But I would suggest that you rethink your position and see if you can't do something to save yourself off the sinking ship. Now, Jackson warned us clear back in the 1830s. You went to public school. Nobody ever read you this story. Remember, Sheldon Emery asked this question. He said, haven't they told you? And then he listed below are the individuals, organizations, and publications that control rather completely what you know and do not know. So read this list and see if any of these organizations on this list since 1920 have told you any of the simple truths about our iniquitous debt usury economic system, which you have read in this little booklet. And he asked the question, he said, have you heard any of these stories that you've listened to on the Law Hour, an editorial review, come from vice presidents, presidents, or presidential candidates? How about any cabinet members like Condoleezza Rice, or U.S. judges or other appointed U.S. officials? Have you heard this from Chief Justice Rehnquist? How about any U.S. senators like Ted Kennedy or representatives except for, and he listed several here, like Charles Lindbergh, I mentioned Ron Paul, except for a limited few representatives, of which there have been a few, you know, like Charlie Lindbergh. How about the Republican Party or your state governors and members of your state legislatures? Have any of those people alerted you to this money problem? Told you about Andrew Jackson and the Den of Vipers? How about news sources such as the Associated Press or the United Press International, Reuters, any large daily newspapers like USA Today or the New York Times or Wall Street Journal? Have they alerted you to this? How about any labor unions like the AFL or the CIO or the Teamsters or the United Mine Workers, huh? Farm organizations, you farmers out there, is the Farmers Union or the Farm Bureau? How about any business organizations like the National Association of Manufacturers or the Better Business Bureau or the Chamber of Commerce? Any business or trade publications, have they alerted you to the Federal Reserve and what it is that they're doing to us and to our nation? How about medical or scientific or professional organizations, the Masonic Order, any Catholic Pope or Bishop or Priest or Cardinal, Jewish rabbis? How about the World Council of Churches or the National Council of Churches or the Mormons or Jehovah's Witnesses or the Pentecostals, religious magazines or publishing houses and bookstores? How about your preacher or your minister? Has anybody ever said to you, hey, listen, you know, we got a problem here, you know, with this Federal Reserve. Maybe this isn't as good a program as we could have imagined. Well, I got to cut it off and leave it right there. We'll take it up here again next time when we come back on the editorial review. All right, you've been listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by prearrangement only. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, there's the signal. Says our time's up. We'll have to leave it right there. I'll see you back here tomorrow night, God willing. Same time, same station. So until then, good night, friends.